Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 108 of the Ron and Brian podcast. I'm Ron, as always, joined by my podcast partner and best friend, Brian. Brian, how you holding up this week, sir?
I think like a lot of Americans, just overwhelmed by what has taken place since the last time you and I sat down.
It's been, a week and a half? Apologies.
Week and a half.
Had a little power issue at the Bailey household. A tree decided to fall in the front of the house, but no one was hurt. No major damage. Just didn't have power last week, but we are back. We are ready to record. And what a week it has been with protests in all 50 states and expanding around the world, foreign nations protesting to support Black Lives Matter. I'm with you. It's been a year. I mean, on top of, you know, the pandemic and, you know, we thought murder hornets were going to be the next big thing, but murder cops ended up being the big thing, unfortunately. And we talked to, we had Scott Kingsley, news reporter, on a week and a half ago. Even he, a avowed conservative, felt that what happened in Minneapolis was a horrible thing. And unfortunately, it continues to get more horrible as the protests, for the most part peaceful, are then met by, I mean, police brutality, I think is the phrase you would have to use to describe it.
It's painful when The Onion has a headline to a news story that literally nails the irony of what's taking place. And I believe it was The Onion where it was police meet protest over police brutality with further brutality. And it was just, it was something right up The Onion's niche, except for the fact that A, it was true, and B, they absolutely nailed the fact that in so many cases of the protests over the past 10 days, and keep in mind, there was a time, I don't believe it's happening now or as prevalent, or it's just simply not being reported, but there was a time when there was massive amounts of looting, rioting, property damage, fires, burnings. I understand that at that time there needed to be some type of, we need to restore some type of order. But what I don't understand, and I'm shocked and chagrined, and it's still taking place, are peaceful protesters that are being met by violent reactions from cops.
Right. You're seeing pepper spray, rubber bullets, police being arrested and charged with their forceful attacks on protesters. We saw it here in Philadelphia. Joseph Bologna, very unfortunately named police officer, who beat a protester with a baton and was arrested and charged with assault. And then what's the thing we see? He gets bailed out. He's escorted out by, you know, the leaders of the local FOP, and his fellow officers are lined up outside the precinct applauding him as he gets out, applauding a man who on video beat a protester with a baton.
Now, is this the man that looked like he was in the shape of a baloney?
It's hard to say because he's a very large man, but also the head of the Philadelphia Police Union is an extremely large man as well.
Well, we're talking Philadelphia, so right. There's going to be a lot of large men in there. But specifically the video, you sent me the link earlier today and I watched it, shows peaceful protesters. A cop goes to grab a protester. A woman reaches out to try to push the cop's hands off. And then this one, I would describe him as if somebody had was making sausage and put too much meat into the casing. This one cop just literally goes apeshit on this woman, beating her with a baton and then lunging after her on her, and is immediately backed up by another police officer.
Was that, were they on bicycles? Because I believe, ironically enough, I believe Joey Baloney was part of the bike brigade for the Philadelphia police. I think I sent you a separate, and that's the frightening thing, is there's so much material of police beating on protesters around the country that you, it's hard right. to decide which video is which. So normally right. we would start off with some of our weekly bits, you know, drink of the week, beef of the week, what have you. You know, between Brian and I, we didn't feel that was, I don't know, we didn't have it in us this week. You know, we attempt to be lighthearted. We have some things that hopefully will give you a chuckle because everyone needs that this week. But, you know, what we're drinking, what minor beef we might have just seemed very much irrelevant given the actions of the past week and a half. Our other weekly bit, this week in racism, you know, it's something that's been around for a couple of years. Again, it's something we have fun with. After seeing everything the last week and a half, you know, I didn't feel it was something appropriate to do this week. And the challenge that I have is, you know, is this something we continue moving forward? Because, again, we do it in a lighthearted manner. And, you know, I don't want to give the impression that we find racism funny. And I don't, you know, it's that whole thing about people saying, you know, you just, it's not enough to not be racist. You need to be anti-racist. And that was always kind of the intent when starting that bit, was to kind of point out the stupidity of the racists in this country. And yes, we did have some fun with it by, you know, making it into a weekly contest and having the annual, you know, Racism Madness tournament and, you know, trying to give this horrible issue in our country kind of a humorous take on it. I mean, I feel it's important to an extent that you bring this kind of stuff to light. Unfortunately, as states are letting people go back out, I mean, you know, we went weeks without having, you know, racist stories that we could point to during the show. Now we're back up to having 5, 6, 7, 8 a week. I don't know. Brian, I wanted to throw this out here to you in the podcast, let you know what I'm feeling, and I kind of want to get your thoughts on it. I mean, you own 49% of the podcast, so you have almost as much of a voice in this as I do. Wanted to see what your thoughts are on the subject.
You're never going to let it down. You're never going to allow me to feel like an equal partner in this podcast, and it's something that, I mean, this obviously goes back 25 years to when we were doing this show on college radio. At the time, I really wanted that Nirvana CD, and I didn't have the money on me. And you lent me, I believe it was $10.99 at the time for me to purchase the CD of the Nirvana album. And I just feel that the distribution of ownership of this podcast, I think it's time for us to go 50-50.
We'll take it under consideration in the future. It's like they say on Shark Tank, never give up your equity, Brian. Never give up your equity. But regardless, let me hear your thoughts on this week in racism.
Do I suddenly feel that it's, I no longer feel it's okay for us to make light of the Racist of the Week audio clip. But at the same time, I genuinely feel like I've been given 49% of this platform, and to be able to sit there, and I'm not going to go to Arkansas. I'm not going to go to upstate New York, Buffalo. I'm not going to be able to physically interact with these racists. But the least I can do is, in my world that I do have 49% of the control over, is hold these people to the fire of, you are a terrible human being. I don't think it's appropriate anymore for us to do this stuff with a smile on their face, being like, wow, I can't believe this person said that. That's insane. You need to openly condemn them. You know, I think that our behavior, our posts on social media are a lot more in line with what we should be doing here in the podcast.
All right. I would also like to open it up, you know, obviously to our listeners as well. Get your thoughts, you know, feel free to go to ronandbrianpodcast.com. You can go to the contact us page there on the site and also give us your thoughts. You know, Brian, you've given me a lot to think about. I think we'll probably discuss this more offline. And, you know, again, at the end of the day, I do agree with you where I feel that it's important to keep getting these stories out there and keeping it in people's faces because, you know, when the light stops being shined on these individuals, you know, their lives start to go back to relative normal. You know, Amy Cooper, who we discussed the other week, got her dog back.
Yes.
So it's like, you know, and all right, yeah, she lost her job, but, you know, if they were going to ban her from the park. You know, I guess for me, that's the other frustrating thing with This Week in Racism is when you try and do some follow-up and look and see what happened to these individuals after they're caught on video, after they're caught in the act. Very rarely do you see anything additional about them. It's like, you know, the media is there for the initial clicks and the initial furor, but then there's no need for them to follow up. And I guess, you know, people will either revert to their prior ways of behavior or they will make the changes they need to make as people. But I feel if you allow their story to go silent quickly, there's no real push for them to be better people.
So what if we decide to incorporate within This Week in Racism a recap? Where are they now?
I mean, we can try. We certainly have the racism recap audio.
Racism Rewind.
So it is there. But again, that's the challenge is... The info is so hard to get. And maybe we can, like I said, maybe we can attempt to do that to keep follow up. You know, maybe we do it in a more serious light. We'll discuss. You know, again, I open up feedback from the listeners and we will see where this goes. But we will not be doing, at the very least, we will be giving This Week in Racism a hiatus this week. Next week, we will see what happens.
I almost feel like this entire episode is going to be This Week in Racism.
It basically is. A lot of it, you know, I think we have a lot of stories regarding the police because that's obviously a big topic this week. I do have some clips. One thing that people have been watching a lot is the LA Police Commission have been holding some Zoom meetings to cover some of the issues they've been having with the police out in LA handling some of their riots, and people have been going on and getting, you know, 30 seconds. Some guy got 2 minutes, just tearing apart these, the police commission and the members on it. Here's a sample of what people have been doing.
Black Lives Matter, defund the police. I find it disgusting that the LAPD is slaughtering peaceful protesters on the street. I had two friends go to the protest in Beverly Hills a couple of days ago, and the protest was peaceful until the police showed up with their excessive violent force, shooting rubber bullets and throwing tear gas. Is this what you think of protecting and serving? Because I think it's bullshit. Fuck you, Michael Moore. I refuse to call you an officer or a chief because you don't deserve those titles. You are a disgrace. Suck my dick and choke on it. I yield my time. Fuck you.
I like how he yields his time, but gets one last F-bomb in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the greatest thing is the people on the police commission really just have to sit there with like stone faces and not react to, you know, people cursing them out. Here's another one.
I just want to say congratulations. You're all getting famous for being faces of corruption and evil. You cowards are using chemical weapons on peaceful protesters during a pandemic. You make me fucking sick. Especially you, Steve and Eileen, you repugnant little babies. I'm so sick of seeing you two messing with your phones and squirming this entire time. You are doubly disgusting. You work for us. Don't you fucking forget it ever again. And Mike Moore, you need to be fired immediately. But hey, little guy, you can always learn how to code. Black Lives Matter.
He got real close to the microphone there. He wanted to.
Yeah, very much so.
Now, this guy admittedly went a little dark.
Do understand that your information is public online and people can find you to just sit up and protest outside your home. Does that make you wake up yet? Does that make you afraid yet? Because if not, we can find a way to make you afraid and be just like everybody else. Understand that you are a public servant, and public servants can be run out of town, just like a dog that you are. Don't worry, they can find you. And if by the end of the week you are not out of the office, people will find you and post your information online. Good day.
I would probably resign after a call. Yeah, like that.
That's just a blatant threat.
But this guy, this is the last one of these clips. This guy, I think, just really. Yes, you have something to say?
How did we not get included on that Zoom call?
I'm not
like,
sure.
Why am I finding out about that Zoom opportunity now? Why was I not told in advance, hey, here's a link to join a Zoom meeting with the LA commissioners?
You were too busy staring at your new beer fridge, I think.
You will get 30 seconds. It's right there. You will get a minimum of 30 seconds to talk to a platform.
Well, we can see they may be doing more of these. We can see if we can get you a voice on there. But I think it would be difficult for anybody to top this gentleman.
Great. First things first, Chief Moore, you got to do a better job of pretending you care about this, man. I've been watching you roll your eyes and offer half-hearted smirks, acting like a teenager who's falling asleep in detention. Are you not aware of the war crimes your department's doing, or are you just that impatient to go do more of them? I see a lot of you, particularly Soboroff, only react when folks use profanity in their remarks. If you think curse words are bad, wait until you hear about these 600-plus murders your department has committed over the last 7 years. As long as Moore's out here equating peaceful protesters with cops who murder black people, you all could pretend to be as angry about murder as the F word. Okay, kids? I know you're all having a rough day. What with everyone here telling you you're bad at your jobs. Have you considered being good at your jobs? If not, you could find new jobs in retail or restaurants. I know how desperate Garcetti is to get Angelinos consuming again during a global pandemic. Where were the curfews then? By the way, weird. Chief Moore is morally obligated to resign. Mikey, I know you said you didn't mean protesters are as much to blame for George Floyd's murder as his murderers. That's a lie. It is what you meant, and we all know it. Mikey's made it clear in his racist actions and empty platitudes that he doesn't care about the well-being of his constituents. He loves to tear gas them, blind them, force them indoors with curfews that are announced only a half hour before they take effect, and racially profile as he does so. Don't think I didn't hear about how yesterday you sent out an alert in English saying curfew started at 5 p.m. and sent out an alert right after in Spanish saying it started at 6. What's up with that, bud? All your cute Zoom background photos of the city won't trick us into thinking you care about anyone but yourselves and what's in your pockets. To close with a James Cameron quote, cops think of all non-cops as less than they are, stupid, weak, and evil. They dehumanize the people they're sworn to protect and desensitize themselves in order to do that job. That's you pigs to a T. Black Lives Matter, act like it. Happy Tuesday.
Killer.
Nailed it. That kid nailed it.
I think my favorite part, and I think it was yours too, when he was like, why don't you try doing a good job?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the truth. Absolutely. And that is the God's honest truth. You know, we continue to see responsiveness from the police, you know, really amping things up in Minneapolis. You know, obviously that was the location where George Floyd was murdered. And you know, the cops have done two things. They've stepped up their attacks on protesters, but in the remainder of the city, they've basically stopped policing.
Really?
You know, they've basically gone to kind of a hands off, and arrests in the rest of the city have dropped significantly.
Is this their like passive aggressive way of saying like, if you want, like, don't come after us, otherwise right. we'll just stop doing our job? But they want to collect the full salary.
They want to collect the full salary, and they're able to do so. They're not held to a standard, you know. And this is the interesting thing. that you're starting to see across the country where organized labor unions are being pushed by their members to cut ties with police unions because they feel the police unions are not representing the everyday person, not representing their workers. They're more representing, you know, industry, representing corporations, you know, not representing their interests. So it is very interesting when unions don't stand alongside each other. Be curious to see what happens as this goes forward. Especially, you know, people are saying defund the police. People are saying abolish the police. What's your thoughts on the defund the police movement? Excuse me.
I absolutely feel that what is the saying about insanity? It's doing the same act every time, getting the same results, but thinking that if you do it again,
it's going to be different
is going to happen.
Right.
Clearly, what has been going on doesn't work in the African American community. It's not working. It's working perfectly fine in suburbia. The lack of violent crime, the lack of the over-policing and whatnot, there is relative security in suburbia, which is ironic because when you speak to people who grew up in suburbia, those kids are doing more criminal shit than I did growing up in New York City. I wasn't blowing things up. I wasn't killing animals. Like, these kids are like, oh yeah, we killed cats, we killed dogs, we blew up this and that. We were drinking at 12, but it's simply saying, oh, there's crime in the cities. So what we need to do is we need to spend more money on the police department. We need to spend more money on the police department, and somehow expecting that there is this magic number that you can spend that is somehow going to cut down on crime when it's just making the situation worse. What I think the problem with defunding the police is that and I know it's exactly what they're talking about, but it's being misconstrued as to end the police, strip them of all their monies, refuse to pay for policing. And suddenly you've got people who are now of the mindset of, well, I don't like the violence that the police are contributing towards, but I still want to make sure that there's somebody who's going to come when my house has been broken into. So I don't really like the idea of defunding the police. When really what the movement is talking about right now is stop this insane level of funding of the police to the point where they literally are a homegrown military. As an American, I see absolutely no reason why a police department feels the need to have tanks.
Right. Why is that even a necessary piece of equipment?
That I understand that there may be times where we have an uprising and whatnot, and I imagine that's exactly why we have the mechanism called the National Guard, which is a American military that is housed by volunteers, but you call them in during bad situations. But we have somehow, I mean, if you look at the, if you look physically at the uniforms that these police officers are showing up to these protests for, are showing up immediately prepared for riots.
Right. They're prepared for the absolute worst situation. They're going into these situations like they are facing another armed militia rather than a group of unarmed protesters or protesters that are armed with, you know, water bottles or, you know, rubber balls or something along those lines.
Yeah, it's the there's that famous photo of a African-American male with a child on his shoulders, standing in front of a police officer in full riot gear, who is holding like a tear gas gun, aiming it right at the little girl.
Right. I mean, they've made no issue what? To not aim for faces, for heads. I saw a video where there was an African-American teenager, you know, hands over his head, you know, not creating, you know, I don't know if he was expecting to be arrested or what the situation was. He had a face covering on, obviously, due to the COVID situation. New York police officer walks up to him, pulls down his face covering and pepper sprays him.
Yes, absolutely.
Again, teenage kid, $120, dripping wet out of the shower, maybe. Not a threat to a big cop. Again, hands over head, no weapons, just pepper sprays him. Same thing with that one, that video I sent you earlier. You know, they mouth, you know, people are yelling at the police, not aggressively approaching them. Then the police aggressively approach them, arrest somebody, and pepper spray the rest of the group.
And yet you see examples over this past 2 weeks where there are towns, cities, whatnot, where the head of police comes out T-shirt and pants, T-shirts and slacks, no riot gear, no visor. You can see into his face. You see his hair, lustrous like yours. And his comment of is, this is unacceptable. What the police officers did in Minneapolis, unacceptable. We are here with you. We are against what took place up there, and we want to protect. We are here to protect you because of your right to protest.
Right. I mean, what looks,
and did you see the reaction that they received?
Yeah, it was a very welcoming, warm reaction from people. It was something that they've been waiting for decades, to get that kind of response from someone in power at their local police station.
And yet you compare it to other cities where the police are coming out in riot gear, and no shit, there's going to be a problem. You've got cops that are being prepared to exert force, and given an opportunity, they are ready to exert force.
Or look at, you know, you look at Atlanta, for example, where the police chief went down to talk to the protesters, to talk to the public, you know, uniform shirt, uniform pants, no mask, you know, no sidearm, no flak jacket, bulletproof vest, and literally talked to people and said, I want to hear your voices. I want to make sure, you know, this was after they suspended those six officers that basically attacked the college couple in their car. And came down and said that was unacceptable. That was unacceptable. This happened on my watch, so I am responsible, and I want to hear what you say. You have that type of response in a community versus when you see what happened up in Buffalo, New York, where that 75-year-old protester gets shoved to the ground, hits his head, bleeding from the back of his head, bleeding from his ear. The cops just leave him there. The cop's spokesperson says, oh, he tripped and fell, even though the video proved otherwise. So they suspend the two police officers involved. So 57 police officers resign from the emergency squad in protest. So
I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know under what is, other than this blind, and I want to call it, it's a gang mentality.
Yeah.
You're a member of my gang, so no matter what happens, I am on your side.
Yeah.
You've got a 75-year-old man that is approaching police officers, and they shove him to the fucking ground. This man was not a threat in any way.
Well, they said he was antagonizing the police all afternoon. All right, so you got a 75-year-old guy, again, stick thin, you know, 75 years old, no weapons, and he's going up against an entire police battalion backed up by the National Guard.
Right.
And somehow they viewed him as a threat.
To protect and serve.
And if he was a threat,
who were they protecting? Who were those two police officers protecting? Who were they serving when they pushed that man to the ground? And what bothers me equally as bad as the two guys pushing that old man to the ground is the fact that the entire department, the entire riot squad, or whatever they're called, decided, you know what? We would rather quit our jobs than allow one of our members to be held accountable for shoving an elderly adult onto the ground, requiring him to be hospitalized.
Yeah.
We would rather quit our jobs.
So I wanted to read this thing for you since we're still on the defund, abolish the police topic. I wasn't able to find the author of this, but I found this online. Says, in white America, police is synonymous with public safety. Sure, there are some problems that need to be fixed, but at the end of the day, the police are there to keep the community safe. They serve as friendly security guards at our suburban public schools. They pull over drunk drivers or maybe even give you a ride home if they see you stumbling to your car. You would call them if you were ever in fear of robbery or violence, and heck, they direct traffic for the public 4th of July celebration in the park. So the phrase, abolish the police, makes no sense in white America. Abolish public safety? Why would we do that? No, we just need to weed out the bad apples and enact a few common sense reforms. In black America, police is synonymous with control. The police make you go through a metal detector on your way into school and drag you out of a classroom if you get into an argument with the teacher. The police stop you and frisk you with no cause, hoping to find any reason to justify their search and sometimes planting drugs or a gun on your body. If you call the police to report a burglary at your bodega, you'd better remember to tell them what you're wearing so they don't accidentally arrest you instead of the burglar. And some police, you assume, are good people. I've lived in Harlem and Bed-Stuy for 8 years. In both neighborhoods, there's been a spot within a couple blocks of my apartment where the police maintain an all-night presence, typically with several police cars flashing their lights. Every night. All night. Kids grow up in the buildings next to these checkpoints. Every night, they fall asleep watching red and blue, red and blue, red and blue police lights shining through the window, twirling on the ceiling, seeping into their dreams. Every night. The institution of policing is both of these things. Public safety for the rich, the powerful, the white, and the compliant. Brutality, suspicion, and fear for the homeless, the poor, the black, and the protesters. The institution of policing is both of these things. Both elements are in the DNA of policing. You see it clearly as you go back through history. Shootings of unarmed black people, brutality towards protesters, beating up Queens at Stonewall, hosing down freedom riders, tapping MLK's phone and trying to convince him to commit suicide, attacking labor unions and breaking strikes. In the South, municipal police departments involved out of slave patrols paid by plantation owners to hunt down escaped slaves. We can untangle public safety from policing. Moreover, the only way that all Americans can have public safety is to end the institution of policing, to abolish the police and replace it with new institutions that are not designed to control, but to aid. Interesting thought. Very well written. I mean, we saw that, you know, nearby in Camden, New Jersey, basically eliminated their police department. It was so bad, it was so corrupt, that mm-hmm. they decided to eliminate it, reform it. All officers had to reapply for their jobs. And has it been perfect? No. But it's been a lot better. You know, they funneled funds into, you know, drug treatment programs, dealing with drug addiction, dealing with mental health issue, social work. You know, thing, you know, you are asking, I mean, you know, not to defend police, but you are asking police to do a lot of things, to pick up social work, to pick up, you know, and handle drug addicts, to handle homelessness, to handle stray dogs in some areas, because every other service in cities is being cut. That's what defund the police comes down to, is cut the funding that allows these police to militarize themselves and give that money to social programs within the cities that will actually help people and break the cycle of violence, break the cycle of jailing, and hopefully help people live better lives.
Listen, the one thing that we have seen in this country over the past 3 months is that if there is an issue that is important to America, we will literally print money.
Right.
The argument that took place during the Democratic presidential nomination caucus primary, whatnot, of, oh, it's too expensive for healthcare for all. We can never afford it. We spent more money on the coronavirus response and the support for corporate America and the $1,200 stimulus checks, we spent more money on that than it would have cost to pay for everybody's health care.
One thing, if there is one thing that the coronavirus proved from a government standpoint, is the money is available if we need it. We can find ways to fund programs when it is absolutely necessary.
The federal government did not sit there and say, listen, we would love to support corporate America right now as this pandemic has just wiped out everybody's business, but the money's just not there.
Right.
Or there's no way we can afford to provide subsidies and grants and loans to small businesses. The money's just not there. No. They sat there and said, this is an absolute horror that's impacting the American economy. We need to support and stabilize.
Yet,
when it's an inconvenient issue, suddenly the money's not there.
Right. Some other police stories that we were following this past week. Louisville, Kentucky, proving to be horrible from a police department standpoint. They killed a local business owner, David McAfee. He was the owner of Yaya's Barbecue in Western Louisville. Shot and killed by a group of police officers. Police officers who were required by policy to all have their body cams active during the situation. Shockingly, none of the police had them on. All of the police turned off their cameras. Mind you, Louisville is also the same location where Breonna Taylor was killed based on a no-knock warrant where they were looking for a custody who was already in, looking for a suspect who was already in custody hours before. And they break into her apartment. Her boyfriend, not knowing they were police, thinking they were being robbed, fires a couple of shots, and the police kill Breonna Taylor, and then initially charge her boyfriend with attempted murder for firing at the police.
Excuse me. That story is a fucking outrage.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say this, and this is where, a lot of, first off, the way I'm wired and one of the lessons I've learned over the past 2 weeks is ask yourself the question of what could you do differently? How can you be better of an American citizen? I heard about that story when it took place, and it literally was a faint blip on my radar, and I moved on in life. And when the protest started and her name started popping up again, and I actually paused and read what had happened to her, it is an incredible fucking outrage.
Yeah.
Not only were the police going into the wrong house looking for a drug dealer, but they had arrested that drug dealer earlier on in the day.
Yep. So
there was no reason they knocked on that door.
Right.
I'm sorry.
It wasn't even a knock. They didn't even knock. It was a no-knock warrant, so they just broke in.
Went right in, and when they are shot at, they return fire, and then it's, oh, whoops, we made a goof. Ah, come on, guys, let's just move on. Our bad. That's the problem. And I think that's the level of outrage that's going on right now, is that the police are meant to protect us. And yet they have been given this seemingly unending license to kill when they choose. And the fact that it is over the past, we'll call it 20 years, it is just this never-ending list of African-American, male, females, children that are murdered by police officers, and yet not only are they not punished for it, but there is not even a sense of, we need to make sure this doesn't happen again.
No, not at all. The mayor of Louisville did at least take some quick action, firing Police Chief Steve Conrad last Monday after the death of David McAfee. But how many people had to die for this guy to be removed from his job? Clearly one more needed to die.
Were there not protests, like that police chief would still be in his job.
Yeah. And then I saw a clip earlier before we did the podcast, again from Louisville, police firing on reporters with rubber bullets covering the protest. Literally, you see the viewpoint of the cameraman, and the police officer is standing at him, can clearly see he is holding a television camera, and just repeatedly fires on him with rubber pepper bullets.
This is one of the fucking ironies, is that there is absolutely no sense on the individual police officer level of an apology or I did wrong. I should not have done that. I am terribly sorry. It is an absolute code of silence at that level. You know, the police officers talk about their thin blue line, but like, you know, they want everybody to talk to them. They want everybody to be comfortable with them. But there is an environment where people are not comfortable with the police. Wait. And the problem is that these types of police actions are not, they're not held accountable. They're not held responsible. And it just keeps happening over and over again. And somehow the police expect that their reputation on the American street is somehow to be improved.
Well, and again, I think they realize that their union is going to support them regardless of what happens. I don't know if you saw this story, but I'm sure it will piss you off as I tell you about it. Down in Brevard County, Florida, a Fraternal Order of Police branch based down there made a post on Facebook, on their Facebook page, basically shouting out to the officers in Buffalo and Georgia to apply for new positions in Florida. Said, hey, Buffalo 57 at Atlanta 6, we are hiring in Florida. Lower taxes, no spineless leadership or dumb mayors rambling on in a press conference. Plus, we got your back. Hashtag Law and Order Florida. Hashtag move to where you are.
Doesn't upset me at all.
It doesn't upset you?
No, because it's Florida. because it's Florida, I sit there and go, well, yeah, that's Florida. I would expect that type of
wouldn't
backwards,
you agree that
dumb
is the mindset
behavior
of all FOPs? Even in New York City, the head of your FOP, when an officer dare gets charged or suspended, basically goes out and says, well, I guess we got to step back and not police so hard.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's ridiculous. I keep saying this. John Oliver has been doing some of his best work during the coronavirus, during all this, did a great episode this past Sunday regarding the police. The one thing that, he had a bunch of statistics in there. The one statistic that really jumped out at me was when he said that if you look at the 10 largest police departments in this country over the last 5 years have paid out over $1 billion in settlements due to police violence and police murder.
That upsets me, and it may be because I'm Jewish, but that actually upsets me more than the Florida Police Department encouraging the Buffalo police officers to move down there and apply for positions. Mm. The fact that there is such a system so broken that their negligence costs $1 billion and our society's response is, well, let's give them more money.
Right. It's insane. We had talked about trying to give a platform for Black voices during this episode. We did pull some clips. Brian, are you okay if I play some of these clips?
Of course.
All right.
This is, well, I mean, it's 51% of this podcast is yours. So you, I'm going to let you, you know, you don't really need to run things by me. I mean, you do have a majority.
All right. So this first one is a clip. This is Desiree Barnes. She was an aide to President Obama. She is the founder of BRKDN Strategies. She lives in the East Village in New York City. Encountered some protesters there that had, you know, kind of destroyed the neighborhood, set fire, and kind of went on a 4 or 5 minute rant against them, but I think there's some good stuff to take away here.
These are f***ing people who live in public housing, and you just made a f***ing melee. You took down bus routes. There are people who live in this neighborhood who have to go back uptown to work, and you are here profiting off of our f***ing pain. So you f***ing protest. Every single last one of you, you think about what it's like to be a black woman in this f***ing neighborhood who lives with people in public housing, who now has f***ing shit to walk through, who bag your grocery, who drop off your food, who defend you, who go uptown to a f***ing hospital to serve this community. So as you're out here, be f***ing responsible. Have a f***ing plan. You can protest all you want, but the shit I just saw take place. I know there are people out here, homeless people, who f***ing rely on those banks to charge their f***ing phone. And you think it's okay to take down a neighborhood? You don't see corporations here. There are human beings that live in this goddamn neighborhood. You do this in Harlem, you do this in Brooklyn, and I swear on everything. These people in this neighborhood deserve better. And I'm not talking about the gentrification. I'm not talking about the students who come here and pay cash to go to NYU. I am talking about the people who go to a methadone clinic down the goddamn street. And you f***ing think this is a protest? I gave my f***ing blood, sweat, and tears for this country. I served this country for 10 goddamn years. So when you think about this anger and this f***ing rage, because there's a way to get answers, every single last one of you better be f***ing registered to vote. Every single last one of you.
We are.
Yeah.
So do me a favor for every single person out here protesting. Remember, there's 3 homeless men who rely on that as a charging station. And what will it even work now? For the sake of what? So you can go back home to your f***ing comforts. Sit in your house and think that you did some f***ing work today. There are people out here who work in these bodegas, who are security officers, who are maybe not descendants of slavery, but came over here as immigrants to do their jobs.
So great, everybody's.
And you created an unsafe goddamn environment. And I am tired of it. I don't care how you decide to organize and protest. But you don't f***ing riot. You don't burn f***ing my goddamn neighborhood. I am a resident here. And you will f***ing realize this resident doesn't look like any of you. Because she is black. She has a f***ing right to be mad. But when you come in here with your f***ing privilege, and you take down resources that my community needs. These houses, these buildings are dilapidated because of f***ing, we don't have patrons here. There are immigrants who f***ing built a f***ing eyebrow threading studio. And we got spray paint on their f***. So you want to f***ing do something? Make sure you're registered to vote. So start out a goddamn fire, and you better pass it on to all of your f***ing friends.
We will.
You stay out of our f***ing neighborhoods and you take this shit to the corporations, you take it to Wall Street, but you don't fucking come on this block. Period. This is a fucking neighborhood with immigrants. And you should treat it as such.
Yeah, definitely very powerful. And while we've seen, you know, I mean, I don't give a shit if a Target gets looted. I mean, maybe that's just me. But when it's neighborhoods, people that are, you know, middle to low income as it is, for their neighborhoods to be torn up due to these protests, that's tough to see. And you can certainly understand her rage.
I don't have any particular affinity towards Target. But I don't know that looting Target is going to change anything. I don't think looting a bodega is going to change anything. I think the people that are looting are the ones that are sitting there saying, hey, there's people protesting in the streets. How can I use this to my advantage? And there's a whole lot of theories out there as to who was doing the looting. Who was doing the rioting? Who were instigating crowds towards violence? Whole slew of conspiracy theories. Wasn't there? I don't know. But what I do know is that society is not responding so much to the rioting, but they are responding to the protests. I will be 48 in a few months. Please hold off on the birthday celebrations. I know the date is on your calendar, Ron.
Yes.
But the fact is that in my lifetime, I cannot remember a time when there were daily protests by the size, and it's expanding. Not only are there protests every day for 2 weeks now, but there are more protests that are going on. It's not just meeting in New York City and we're going to walk up Park Avenue, but it is on a daily basis. There's 20 different protests going on in the city on any given day. It's spread globally. You touched upon it earlier. Other countries, which literally must just be having a mockery with us as to what the shit show that we, you know, we talk about being the world's leaders and the world's police, but we are a rotten apple. That in so many cases we're trying to tack on as much layers of wax on the outside so people don't realize what's going on in the inside. But not only is are other people protesting globally in solidarity with the protesters that are protesting, but they're also taking a look at their own African communities and seeing the injustices that are being perpetrated on them. There are other countries that are looking at, you know, police killings that are taking place, saying, hey, wait a second. You know what? We weren't angry enough back then, but you know what? We are angry. This should not be allowed in this country. It's, you know, you're seeing the dial move in a way that, you know what? It's already moved. You know, it may not move to the point where we're all going to sit there patting ourselves on the back while, you know, getting haircuts on your deck. But at the end of the day, it already has moved. I mean, just think about it. You've got racist police officers that are being exposed. You've got police chiefs that are losing their jobs because they're not properly managing their police departments. We've got a long way to go. I know there's a lot of people that are afraid of drastic, rapid change. It makes them feel uneasy. They, I don't know what the word is, they personalize it. They
compartmentalize it.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. And the thing is just the fact that, it's, you know, hopefully, you know, the death of George Floyd was a truly tragic event in this country. And hopefully some good can come out of it.
That is the hope. You talk about the rioting, you talk about the looting. I do want to play another clip here who that kind of addresses it, kind of takes an interesting take on it. This is Kimberly Jones. She is the co-author of a book called I'm Not Dying With You Tonight. This has already been this has been on The Daily Show. It's been on John Oliver, but I think it's worth taking a listen to. It's a little long at 6.5 minutes, but you know, I think it really gives a great perspective of the current situation.
So I've been seeing a lot of things talking of the people making commentary. Interestingly enough, the ones I've noticed that have been making the commentary are wealthy Black people making a commentary about we should not be rioting, we should not be looting, we should not be tearing up our own communities. And then there's been an argument of the other side of we should be hitting them in the pocket. We should be focusing on the blackout days where we don't spend money. But, you know, I feel like we should do both. And I feel like I support both. And I'll tell you why I support both. I support both because there, when you have a civil unrest like this, there are three types of people in the streets. There are the protesters, there are the rioters, and there are the looters. The protesters are there because they actually care about what is happening in the community. They want to raise their voices, and they are there strictly to protest. You have the rioters who are angry, who are anarchists, who really just want to fuck shit up, and that's what they're going to do regardless. And then you have the looters. And the looters almost exclusively are just there to do that, to loot. Now, people are like, well, what did you gain? Well, what did you get from looting? I think that as long as we're focusing on the what, we're not focusing on the why, and that's my issue with that. As long as we're focusing on what they're doing, we're not focusing on why they're doing. And some people are like, well, those aren't people who are legitimately angry about what's happening. Those are people who just want to get stuff. Okay, well then, let's go with that. Let's say that's what it is. Let's ask ourselves why in this country in 2020, the financial gap between poor Blacks and the rest of the world is at such a distance that people feel like their only hope and only opportunity to get some of the things that we flaunt and flash in front of them all the time is to walk through a broken glass window and get it. That they are so hopeless that getting that necklace, getting that TV, getting that change, getting that bed, getting that phone, whatever it is that they're going to get is that in that moment when the riots happen and if they present an opportunity of looting, that's their only opportunity to get it. We need to be questioning that why. Why are people that poor? Why are people that broke? Why are people that food insecure, that clothing insecure, that they feel like their only shot, that they are shooting their shot by walking through a broken glass window to get what they need? And then people want to talk about, well, there's plenty of people who pulled themselves up by their bootstraps and got it on their own. Why can't they do that? Let me explain to you something about economics in America. And I'm so glad that as a child, I got an opportunity to spend time at PUSH where they taught me this, is that we must never forget that economics was the reason that Black people were brought to this country. We came to do the agricultural work in the South and the textile work in the North. Do you understand that? That's what we came to do. We came to do the agricultural work in the South and the textile work in the North. Now, if I right now decided that I wanted to play Monopoly with you, and for 400 rounds of playing Monopoly, I didn't allow you to have any money, I didn't allow you to have anything on the board, I didn't allow for you to have anything. And then we played another 50 rounds of Monopoly, and everything that you gained and you earned while you were playing that round of Monopoly was taken from you. That was Tulsa, that was Rosewood. Those are places where we built Black economic wealth, where we were self-sufficient, where we owned our stores, where we owned our property, and they burned them to the ground. So that's 450 years. So for 400 rounds of Monopoly, you don't get to play at all. Not only do you not get to play, you have to play on the behalf of the person that you're playing against. You have to play and make money and earn wealth for them, and then you have to turn it over to them. So then for 50 years, you finally get a little bit and you're allowed to play. And every time that they don't like the way that you're playing, or that you're catching up, or that you're doing something to be self-sufficient, they burn your game. They burn your cards. They burn your Monopoly money. And then finally at the release and the onset of that, they allow you to play and they say, okay, now you catch up. Now, at this point, the only way you're going to catch up in the game is if the person shares the wealth, correct? But what if every time you share the wealth, then there's psychological warfare against you to say, oh, you're an equal opportunity hire? So if I played 400 rounds of Monopoly with you and I had to play and give you every dime that I made, and then for 50 years, every time that I played, if you didn't like what I did, you got to burn it like they did in Tulsa and like they did in Rosewood. How can you win? How can you win? You can't win. The game is fixed. So when they say, why do you burn down the community? Why do you burn down your own neighborhood? It's not ours. We don't own anything. We don't own anything. Trevor Noah said it so beautifully last night. There's a social contract that we all have, that if you steal or if I steal, then the person who is the authority comes in and they fix the situation. But the person who fixes the situation is killing us. So the social contract is broken. And if the social contract is broken, why the fuck do I give a shit about burning the fucking Football Hall of Fame, about burning a fucking Target? You broke the contract when you killed us in the streets and didn't give a fuck. You broke the contract when for 400 years we played your game and built your wealth. You broke the contract when we built our wealth again on our own by our bootstraps in Tulsa and you dropped bombs on us. When we built it in Rosewood and you came in and you slaughtered us. You broke the contract, so fuck your Target. Fuck your Hall of Fame. As far as I'm concerned, they could burn this bitch to the ground. And it still wouldn't be enough. And they are lucky that what black people are looking for is equality and not revenge.
And you can't argue with her. It's impossible for, obviously it's impossible for us as white men to identify with that pain and with that struggle. But you hear in her voice, it gets me every time I listen to that.
How many times have you listened to it?
I keep listening to it because it shames me it shames me how little I know and how little I understand and how much I thought I knew and how much I thought I understood. If that makes sense.
I think, and I don't know if I'm going to regret saying this, I think that I've led my life over the past maybe 10 years of focusing on what affects me and focusing on what I have control over. So I have seen a lot of injustice, however you want to, you know, varying degrees of it and whatnot, and just said, there's nothing I can do about that. I'm going to focus on what I can focus on. I'm going to spend my time figuring out, what am I going to prepare my father for dinner tomorrow? I'm going to, care about whether there's enough toilet paper in the house while a pandemic is breaking out, things like this. But there's nothing I can do about 450 years of injustice. So what can I do about that? And I think, and I regret that because it literally has allowed me to feel comfortable in a world where I don't realize how fortunate I am to have that choice. You know, you talked earlier about over-policing of neighborhoods. I don't have that. I don't have to worry about that. I was fortunate enough that I grew up in a house where there was going to be money for a college education. Not a private, public school, but it was, yes, you graduate high school, you're going to college. You're going to get a college degree. Unless you're a huge fuck up, and I almost became a huge fuck up, but that's neither here nor there. I apply myself enough professionally that I've worked myself to a place where I get paid enough of a salary that I am not sitting there trying to figure out how I'm going to feed a family. I'm not worried about how am I going to eat tomorrow. I'm lucky that every other Friday there is a paycheck coming in. I mean, I know that's something that you have probably forgotten what it's like, but that's, you know, hopefully at some point, you know, you'll receive a paycheck and understand what it's like to receive wages in exchange for the service that you're providing your employer.
Thank you. For that.
You're welcome. Hey, listen, I think this was the longest I've gone without throwing in some type of reference to you getting fired.
That's fair.
But what I feel lousy about over is that there is such an injustice going on during a period that of my life, and I've done nothing.
I mean, I think what you have
I've done nothing about it.
I think what you've just described there basically is white privilege.
Oh, absolutely. I know. Yeah. I have white privilege. And the example that I think you and I talked about last week was when I do see a cop car, I'm not on edge. I'm not nervous. I'm not thinking to myself, am I wearing a hoodie? You know, are they going to pull me over? What's in my pockets? You know, there are times where I've had things in my pockets that I, you know, maybe did not want people to know about.
But
Asian porn. I'm talking about Asian porn.
Of course.
But like, no, is the fact, but there are people who are walking the streets in my city, other cities, towns, villages, inlets,
all of that.
Commonwealths.
Sure.
Townships.
Those two.
Am I missing anything?
No, I think you covered it all.
Excellent. But I know there are people where it's don't wear that outside the house. You're going to draw attention to yourself if the cops see you. Don't leave the house after a certain period of time. Otherwise, you're going to be seen as a threat. I mean, we had we just had that kid in Georgia who was jogging in a neighborhood.
Yep.
And was executed by self-declared neighborhood watchmen because they felt somehow he did not have a right to run on that street. I don't have to worry about that, which, I mean, keep in mind, I don't go running. So not something it's that
the exercise part is not something you would, but you might be walking.
Yes, and you can absolutely.
You can walk without concern.
Correct. And that's my white privilege.
I mean, just being able to leave the house without concern. You know, again, we talked about this, I forget how long ago it was, but you know, I mentioned about how like one time I noticed my wife's brake light was out on her car and I was like, oh, I'll have to take care of that this weekend. And then realized like, you know, I didn't have to worry about her probably being pulled over. It being a white mm-hmm. woman, probably not going to get pulled over. But B, even if she was pulled over, the worst thing that would happen would be her getting a ticket. Yeah. You know, not having to worry about the her interaction with the police resulting in injury or death.
Correct.
And that's white privilege in and of itself.
Yeah.
It's, you know, again, and so many people are saying this, and it's and people need to step out of their comfort zone. And again, we said it earlier, it's not enough to not be racist. You have to be actively anti-racist. How can we use this podcast for better good? How can we as individuals be better? I mean, look at Ben and Jerry's with the corporate statement they put out. Like other corporations were, yeah, you know, we stand behind Black Lives and Black Lives Matter. Whereas Ben and Jerry's is like, you know what? Fuck you and white supremacy. And here is a list of bullet points that the government needs to act on now to do so. An incredibly strong statement.
I saw today that both Ben and Jerry were arrested at protests.
Yeah, I mean they don't fuck around. They no. walk the walk. Yes. So yeah, how do we be better people, and how do we support everyone in this country? And like the thing, one of the things that like drove me crazy was, you know, we put the word out this past week, saying that we wanted to kind of amplify black voices, and someone out there who is a, let's say a white conservative, probably the best way to put it, sent over some links of people such as, you know, Terrence Williams, Candace Owens, Stacey Dash, who I don't know are necessarily, I don't think they have skin in the game of blacks being equal. I think they enjoy making a living off of being black conservatives. And the message that seemed to come across in a lot of these links is, you know, well, yeah, that's great that Black Lives Matter. Why don't we focus more on black on black crime? And fine, you know, black on black crime.
You actually clicked on the links?
Unfortunately. Black on black crime is an issue. Jesus. White on white crime is an issue. White on black crime is an issue. Black on white crime is an issue. Crime in general is an issue, and I don't think anyone would argue that. The issue at hand is that the people that are supposed to protect and serve are killing people. Depending on which survey you look at, you are 2.5 to 3 times more likely to be killed by a police officer in this country if you are a black man. You are 7 times more likely to encounter violence at the hands of a police officer if you are a black man. You are 1 in 3 black men will be incarcerated in their lifetime. 1 in 1,000 black men are killed by police in this country. Those are the odds. Mm-hmm. Those are the odds. And you're going to focus on black crime? Yes. Crime should be focused on. But the fact that we have people that should be defending those who are having crimes perpetrated against them, but instead are holding them down and imprisoning them and killing them, that is the issue. And that is why people are taking to the streets in every 50 states and around the world. I got nothing else.
The worst part is, and I don't have a solution. I'd love to be able to come to a conclusion where saying this is what we need to do. I wish that I felt secure enough in my knowledge of what was going on to be like Ben and Jerry's and to say, this is what we need. But I genuinely feel overwhelmed by what the black experience is in America. The fact that I don't have that experience, the fact that there are so many different variables, different ways to approach reform. I am bewildered that there are people who are against the idea of equality. There are people who are against the idea that police officers should not be murdering unarmed people. And I don't know how you combat that. I don't know how you override the, I don't know if it's ignorance, but it's not. I think the word is privilege, but there is an inherent refusal to show empathy, to feel empathy, to look at something other than why should this person get a little bit of help because I didn't get that help.
Right.
Without understanding that you were never at the same level with this person. This person was born already with the stack, with a deck of cards stacked against them. Right. They were born not having the economic opportunities that you had. There's a cartoon that's being passed around on social media where there's somebody laying on the ground and they're like, oh, I think I broke my leg. And somebody leans over and says, oh, let me help you. And then a third character comes in and goes, well, what about my leg?
Yeah.
And the person goes, well, it's my leg is hurt. This has nothing to do with your leg. And it's like, it is a perfect summarization of the all lives matter. You know, where nobody's arguing whether white lives matter. Nobody's arguing whether corporate lawyer white male lives matter. They always have. That was never in question. It, you know, if you are a $500 an hour corporate lawyer, you are not driving home concerned that making sure you get home before 8 o'clock, because if you're out on the streets afterwards, you're going to get arrested and possibly executed.
Yeah. Even worse. Yeah. I mean, if you're lucky, you get arrested.
Yeah.
At best, you're arrested. At worst, your family's burying you.
And you don't come home. At worst, is there some very poorly spray painted T-shirts of your face that somehow there's some bad. Listen, I appreciate artists, but there's some bad artwork out there.
I understand what you're saying.
That's all I'm saying.
Listen, I know it, and I know it seems overwhelming. You know, my advice maybe to you, and it's maybe a piece of advice I need to take for myself. Back when I was employed, the one thing that I always said to the people that worked for me is I said, you should always strive each day to do one thing better than you did the day before. And maybe that's what everyone needs to do in their personal lives in this situation. Just start small. Find one thing and do that better than you did it the day before. Whether it's acknowledging racism, whether it's battling racism, whether it's lifting somebody up who has fallen down. Just one thing a day, and by the end of the year, you'll have done 365 things better than you did before. And then it starts to add up.
Now, my problem, I'd love to end the show on that note, because that is some really good advice.
But
the problem with that advice is that it didn't work and you got fired.
Well, I didn't foresee the pandemic. So I will have to say that.
Don't you think that I should do the opposite? Because when you said do one thing better today than I did yesterday, that's what got you fired. Ergo, I should do every day do something a little bit worse than I did the day before, and I will continue getting paid on a biweekly basis.
I'm not going to lie. That hurts a little bit.
If A, then B. If B, then C.
We didn't even get to talk this week about the fact how it appears that the recession actually started in February prior to the whole coronavirus thing really hitting the country. But again,
Patreon, Patreon.
Maybe we'll talk about that in the Patreon.
That's Patreon.
I don't know what else to say. The one thing I will say, again, you kind of touched on it, where white people will complain because they feel black people are being given something that they themselves weren't given, even though white people have had most of the advantages in this country. Listen, when I see a white person who has not made the most of their situation, I look at them like they're the Atlanta Falcons up 28-3 against the Patriots in the Super Bowl. Like, you have been given all of these advantages. You've been given a 25-point lead in life with 15 minutes to go, and you fucking blow it.
Yeah.
So yeah. I have, you know, I don't want to say I have no sympathy, because there are some people that are in tough situations. But I think the people that complain the loudest about equality are the ones that have squandered their opportunities the most.
Interesting.
And unfortunately, this is America still. You see that? You see how I tied the title in there right at the end?
Well done, sir.
Well, thank you all for joining us. Hopefully, next week will be better than this one. Go to ronandbrianpodcast.com. Again, we are looking for your feedback on this week in racism, or just feedback in general. Go to the contact us link on the website, or you can go to any of our social media links. Share us with your friends, and if you're so inclined, throw us a few bucks on the Patreon, upper right hand corner. Click on become a patron. Brian, anything else this week?
Just for the next week, just be a better person than you were last week. That's it.
I feel like you just stole my idea and just spread it out over a week instead of a day. But I will allow you to do that.
My approach doesn't get you fired.
That's fair. I can't argue that. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. And we will catch you next week. Unless you're a Patreon subscriber, then you'll hear more from us soon.